good to chant the Metta Sutta, because there is a lot of Dharma in that, and it's a really skillful way to basically practice and follow the instruction, because if we need to get quite deep in our meditation, the Metta Sutta is a great example to develop the mind, to tranquil the mind, and basically just to practice mindfulness, because I mean, meditation is quite important, but the mindfulness practice is the key to getting deeper meditation, sila, and wisdom. Because without kindness and compassion, then it's hard for the mind to be tranquil and peaceful. So yeah, so Metta Sutta is actually a good way to start off the day, just to remind yourself which direction we inspire to practice. Okay. So Chris, do you have anything to add?
No, I think that's a wonderful way to start with the Metta Sutta. Would you like to continue?
Yes, so we did. I can't remember, I haven't done it for a while. Do we need any introduction, or is it really straightforward?
It's just, you just go straight ahead. For it. Yeah. If you want to pause and ask for questions at any stage, that would be wonderful too.
Okay, no worries. But sometimes I can't remember, is there an introduction? But I think we gave an introduction earlier on. Okay.
Yes, just had an introduction before the Metta Sutta.
Oh, okay. Because sometimes when I teach in other places, the introduction is quite long, and I could wait for like 10 or 15 minutes. But this was a short...
We won't make you do that. We want to hear from you.
This is a short introduction. Okay. So, yeah, today UC is a guided meditation. And UC is just some information and instruction on meditation. But sometimes people will ask, how do you let go? And sometimes I say, how do you let go? Letting go is something that is developed. You can't force it. It has to mature. And the condition has to be there. Because sometimes people say they try and meditate and they try and let go. But it's not working. sometimes they get a headache. And it's too forceful. So that's why mindfulness is very important. So the four foundation of mindfulness is basically the basic instruction to practice. So meditation is basically understanding and being mindful of the body. So when we are walking, when we are standing, when we are sitting, and when we're lying down, when we're working, and when we're eating, and when we're taking a shower. So that mindfulness is very important. So when we are mindful, we are fully aware, and basically fully awake, and knowing what we're doing. If we're not mindful, then our mind is scattered. Then we can be lost in endless thoughts. So having a monkey mind is not mindfulness. Yes, it's a mind full, or a mind that's full of stuff. So mindfulness is very important. So we are mindful of the body, then we are mindful of the feeling. So when we feel happy, when we feel sad, when we feel anxiety, when we depress. So all this mindfulness of feeling is very important. We know when this condition comes and arises in the mind. In the feelings, then mindfulness of the thoughts, or mindfulness of the mind. So we know what the mind is doing. We know if we are concentrated or we are scattered, and we know all these different mind object. So mind object is basically the five senses: seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and feeling. So all these are basically the condition of the mind, what the mind is doing. Then the Then the last is mindfulness of mind object or mindfulness of Dharma. So mindfulness Dharma is basically the cause and condition of what's happening. But it's important to have mindfulness of the body, of feelings and the mind. But the most important thing is mindfulness of the Dharma. So Dharma is what we're doing. So and the teaching. So it's basically a path of practice. So basically, the five aggregates of this body, and the five hindrances. So basically, the five hindrances, to put it in a basic way, we know that if greed arises, it arises in the body, and sometimes in the feeling and in the mind. And when there's anger arise, sometimes it arises, you can feel like stiffness, we feel like really like what's the word? Our heart is beating a lot. We feel very tense, and our hands stiffen up. And we start to sweat. So we know all this condition. Then when we're restless, we know that we can't sit still. We're very scattered. There's so many things happening in our mind, and also doubt. When we have doubt on the practice, And also remorse. When something happens, we feel ashamed, we feel guilty. So these five hindrances is very important. So when they arise in our practice, we understand what's happening and we learn to overcome it by letting go or basically applying a precept, keeping the five precepts. So I guess everyone knows the five precepts. It should be fine not to explain it in detail. So this four foundational mindfulness is a part of the mindfulness practice. So that's why when I start off with meditation, I always start off of just being do a body scanning first. So we scan from our head all the way down to our feet. Then we watch our breathing. After when the body is relaxed, then we are aware of our thoughts. And because our thoughts are so subtle, that's why the awareness of the body, just to relax the whole body first. So once the body is relaxed, the mind is more peaceful, then we become aware of the breath. When the breath becomes more calm and more subtle, then the feelings and the thoughts become more dominant. Then as long as we stay with the breath, then the mind will slowly calm down and become peaceful. So in meditation, we don't stop thinking. Thinking is always there. But we allow our thinking to settle down and become calm and become very peaceful. So it becomes like echo in the background. So when the mind is in the echo in the background, like it's like the clouds moving past. Sometimes you get rainstorm, we get a lot of storm and rain at the moment, the last few days. So as our thoughts and our feelings and emotion is sometimes like a rainstorm, very stormy and very chaotic. But when the storm passes, then it becomes very subtle. You have few clouds, then you have less clouds, then it becomes very clear. So this mindfulness of the mind and our feeling and our thoughts is very important. So we watch all these thoughts and emotions come, then settle down, then basically disappear. So once it disappears, then you have a clear mind. The mind is very clear, it's very peaceful. So once the mind is really, really, really calm and really, really peaceful, then the mind becomes very clear, radiant, bright, and it's like going very deep into the body disappear, and the mind is so silent that it's basically vanished. So once it vanishes, it becomes very interested. Because then you get the really special, pure peace and stillness, where you get the nimittas arising in the mind. So these nimittas are the reflection of the mind. So when the mind is very free, very peaceful, and very still, you get the radiant mind that will arise. It's like a full moon coming out from the cloud, from the dark cloud. When all the clouds disappear, it's basically the thoughts and the emotion, then you see a bright, radiant moon. So basically, it's basically the reflection of the mind. So all this, the Buddha says is possible, and it can be developed skillfully. Yeah, yeah. But the hardest thing is learning to let go, and learn to have a peaceful, calm, radiant, clear mind. That's the hardest thing to do. Yep. So it takes many, many years of practice. But some people, if their condition is right, they can develop it really rapidly and really quick. Sometimes I think maybe it might be good, might be due with past karma or past practice. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, mindfulness is not easy, but it can be developed. It does take time. Sometimes I do give the simile of going mountain climbing. So when people go, like to do extreme sports, they like to go mountain climbing because they have to climb, be in the moment. And if they're not careful, they can fall off and hurt themselves. But luckily they have a safety line, so they are quite safe. I saw a documentary on, solo free climbing. I was going, that looked interesting. So I looked at the documentary. And it talks about a group of people that go climbing up in the mountain without any safety lines. Basically, they just use their hands or their pitchfork to climb up. And I was going, geez, that is really dangerous. And I heard on the documentary that half the people that do solo free climbing, half of them pass away. I was going, wow, that's really dangerous and extreme sport for people's pastime. But when they gave an interview to the person that was doing the climbing, they say when they do climbing, they are in that moment at that time. Their mind is completely fully awake, and they feel very free. Yeah, really free. Yeah, there's no like scattered thoughts. It's like really strong mindfulness, fully awake, and fully free. So they realized all their five senses is just really sharp. While they climb up the mountain. Without a safety line, and usually they do it by themselves. Yep, and they say the reason why they do things like that is they feel alive, they feel really happy, they feel really free. Yep, yep, and they say they have to maintain the calmness in their mind, so they have to be fully calm and really, really, really calm and fully awake while climbing. Yep. Yeah, so that remind me, I used to do a bit of extreme sport. Yeah, you do feel really, really happy and peaceful and really high after that. But that's really extreme sports that they're doing. Yeah, because it is very dangerous, extremely dangerous. But these are very young people that's doing it. And they get a really, really intense high and they feel really awake. Yep. So that is one way of getting mindfulness that I don't really recommend. Yep. So the safe way of being free and happy is to do a practice, the Buddhist way of letting go, of calming the mind, and just watching this body, watching our feeling, watching our mind, then watching our mind object or watching the Dharma. Because when we are aware of this body, this mind, and this feeling, and the object of the sensation coming, that's all we need. We require to practice. The more we understand this body, this feeling, and this mind, and the mind object through the five senses, and also to understand the Buddhist teaching, the mindfulness of Dharma, that's all we need. The more we practice, the more we understand. The more we understand our defilements, then the more we free ourselves from all the anxiety, worry, concern with ourselves, our family, and with the world. Because we live in a world where we try our best. There's always disappointment. People always try and take advantage of us sometimes. And yeah, people will try and manipulate us. And sometimes just the way of the world, because people are going for the defilements. So as long as it's greed, hatred, and delusion, people always take advantage of one another. So sometimes being a Buddhist monk, you try and be kind, you try and be compassionate. Same, we still get blame. And get blame for things that we have not done or things that we have not done properly. So it's tough being a Buddhist monk. Sometimes when you support other monastery or help other supporters or support other monks in the monastery, that's just ordained. Because at the moment we have about 31 monks in the monastery. So the bigger the community, the bigger drama. But it's okay. This is it's a learning and growth. Yep. So when there's bit of problems with ourselves and other people, that's how we learn. We learn all these emotions that arise. When we are blamed, when we are accused, when people put us down, when people praise us. Praise is good. Yep. That's also an defilements. It's also greed, attachment to greed. Yep. So all these things, when they arise, we learn not to get overwhelmed by it and fall over and feel depressed and beat ourselves over it. But at the end of the day, we realize there's no one there. Basically, this mind and body is just empty. Because we think there's someone there, so we react to it. Then the more we react to it, then either we feel good, we feel really happy, or we feel really sad and depressed and miserable. Because in the monastery, especially with 40 men staying in the monastery, young, old, the monastery can be very competitive. So that's one thing I realized. When I joined the monastery, I realized, wow, it can be so competitive. So some people, it's like almost like being in a family. Sometimes worse than a family. It's like being in business again. Okay. But I better stop. Because I don't want to bore people with what's happening in the monastery. So all these four foundations of practice is very important. So no matter how bad things are and how bad people treat us, we watch this emotion arise, we understand it, and we let it go. So when we let it go, become free, then we become happy. The good thing about living in a big monastery, everyone can be a hermit. If we don't have properties, if we don't have much duties, then we can basically disappear. Just go back to our kuti. Like myself, because I've been a monk for about 15 years now. 15 years? Yeah, feel close to 15 years. So the more senior I become, the more I have to teach, the more I have to interact with our supporters, and the more that I have to make sure our new novices and junior monks are doing well. And if they're a bit down, we have to listen to them. And if they complain a lot, then we have to listen to them sometimes too. But I remember there is a lot of free time now. I can spend up to maybe 22 hours or 23 hours by myself. So a lot of time to practice and just understand what's going on. Okay, so I think we'll stop and we will start with the guided meditation. Okay. So I guess everyone here is been practicing meditation for quite a while. There's no new people here. Okay, so yep, I don't think there's any new people. If anyone new to meditation, you can just put out your hand or just put a sign on the Zoom so I know. Okay, so I guess everyone been practicing for a while and quite experienced. Okay, so we always start off, my style of practice, we always start off with mindfulness of the body. Okay, so please find a comfortable spot to sit, then slowly close your eye. With your eye closed, and just breathe normally. It's good to breathe a couple of deep breaths. Now we start off with body scanning from the top of our head. We start be aware of our forehead and we relax our forehead. Now we bring our awareness to our face. Then we relax our face. Now we move down to our jaw. Make sure our jaw is relaxed. Then we bring our awareness to our neck. Make sure our neck is nice and straight. Our face not bent over too much. It's nice and straight, but not too rigid. Then we relax our neck. Now we bring our awareness to our upper body. Yeah. Make sure our upper body is not too tight. Nice and relaxed. Both our right and left shoulder is sag, not too stiff. And just relax. Both our arm socket. And let it sag. And now we bring our awareness to our arms. Our right arms. Make sure it's comfortable. Please move it around. Make sure it's nice and comfortable. Then relax our right arm. Then we do the same with our left arm. Make sure it's comfortable and relax. And then we move down to both our hands. If you need to, you can move it. Make sure it's nice and comfortable. Then relax both our hands and our fingers. And now we bring our awareness back to our upper body, to our back, to our spine. So our upper back, our spine is nice and straight and not too rigid. Let's relax our upper back from our neck down to our base of our back. Yep. And now we move down to our tummy and make sure our clothes is not too tight and just relax our tummy. Now we bring our awareness to our lower back. They're sitting on the cushion or the chair. Make sure it's nice and relaxed. And if you need to, you can move it around and make it comfortable. Then relax our lower back. And now we bring our awareness down to our right leg. Make sure it's nice and loose and relax. And relax from our top of our leg all the way down to our ankle, our knees first, then to our ankle. Then we do the same with our left leg, all the way from the top down to our knees and to our ankle. And if you need to, you can just gently move both our leg around, make sure it's comfortable, then relax both our leg. And finally, we bring our awareness all the way down to our feet and make sure it's nice and relaxed. By moving around, make sure it's really comfortable. Yep. And just loosen our legs, our feet, our toes, and just relax both our feet. From my ankle all the way to our toes. And now we bring our awareness to our whole body and just feel any part that is uncomfortable, tight or stiff, and just relax any part of our body. Feel free just to move it anytime to make it as comfortable as possible. Okay, and now we bring our awareness back to our face. And feel if my face is not too stiff or rigid. And just relax the face. And now we bring our awareness gently to our breathing. And just notice our breathing in and out, calmly and peacefully. Sometimes it's also good just remind yourself just to breathe in peace and breathe out relax. Peace and relax. Peace and relax. And just breathe naturally, calmly, softly. As we become more calm and more relaxed, then our mindfulness will slowly increase. We become more aware of our body, of our mind, of our feelings. So all these are all mind objects. These objects are quite important for Dharma practice, mindfulness of Dharma. So this body is an object of practice. So we are aware of the body. Any tightness, pain, stiffness, we relax. We relax this body as much as possible. Then we are mindful of our feelings. Any feelings of anxiety or tension, we slowly stay with the breath and allow those feelings of anxiety or confusion to slowly settle down, and then make peace with our emotion. And stay with our breath. Any wandering thoughts to our past and future, we let it go. Through mindfulness and awareness, just remind yourself, past is gone, future is uncertain. And stay with this moment, because now is the most important time. This is where we are mindful and aware. And we use these four mindfulness, or these four foundation of mindfulness, to understand and to let go. any sensation from the body, stiffness, tightness, or pain. We just accept this body that is a bit painful or tired. Accept it and just relax. The more we can relax this body, the more we can let it go. Any thoughts or feelings that arise in the mind or body, just allow it to come and go, just like the clouds and the raindrop. They appear, then they fade away. And just gently be aware with the breath. Stay with the breath. And allow everything to slowly calm down and settle. you have a few minutes left before we finish. So the next couple of minutes, see if you can just be the silent availer or the silent watcher. Just silently be aware and just watch. Silently watch the body and aware of our thoughts and our feeling with calm, peace and stillness. The silent watcher. Okay, so just gently come out there. And just relax. Yeah, so basically, meditation is basically learning to be a silent watcher. Just watch and aware of the body, of our feeling, of our mind, and at our object or dharma object. Yeah. So if we can be aware of this emotion, thoughts, pain, crazy mind, and not react, then we don't allow this emotion to just control our heart and our mind. So learning to be a silent watcher will free us from holding on to things. Yeah. I was listening to one talk, and I think one of the senior monks asked Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah is Ajahn Brahm's teacher, a famous meditation teacher. He said, "What do you teach? Do you teach samatha or do you teach upasana?" And Ajahn Chah said, "I teach frustration and letting go." And that was quite a wise teaching, simple teaching. Yeah, in life it's like that. We do get a lot up and down in life. But to keep things simple, no matter how things get, we learn just to make peace and just let it go. Or we can't let it go. We learn to be a silent watcher. We watch it and watch it until it disappears. Or until it becomes less and less and less. Yeah. We watch the anger, the frustration, the anxiety, then watch, then allow it to disappear. So once it's gone, or once we're free of it, that's not a problem. It's only when we hang on to it, we are through our mind or body, then it becomes a problem. Yep. Yeah, so all we need is this body, our feeling, our mind, and our five senses, and just to watch and understand the causing condition that's causing us hurt, pain, then to understand the freedom from all this attachment through our five senses, out from our mind, our conscience, to our five senses, to the world. And we make peace with it. The world becomes very chaotic and crazy, along with your peaceful inside. And that allows wisdom to grow in our heart. I think sometimes it's good being a Buddhist monk. I mean, I went to visit my mum and my family, my brothers and sisters, a month ago. Also, I helped in the monastery that's rebuilding, a lot of work. So I realized how chaotic my family can be here and how busy they are. Jeez, just doing things all the time. Yeah. Then I went to stay with my friends, and they're just working non-stop to get a new building built before the Wasa, during the Wasa. Then I come back to the monastery and spend the first few days in my kutia in the forest with the birds, with the kangaroos, with the plants, with the trees. And it started raining a few days ago, and that was nice. Everything turned green. Yeah, so the forest can be very beautiful. And how peaceful it is. Yeah, silent. Yeah, so that's one thing I really enjoy. Going out to my family, staying in a busy monastery, then coming back and become a hermit again. Up at Bodhiyana Hermit Hill. Yep. Yeah, so it's very nice when you have a quiet time and just learn to be a silent watcher. Thank you. Is there any questions? I invite anyone to ask any questions. Thank you.
Yes, do please ask any questions. We do have one in the chat. Would you like me to read it to you, Bhante?
Yes, that would be good.
Okay. This time, I think I would like to ask, how do we love without getting attached? I find it, just a moment, sorry.
Okay, there is.
I find it hard to believe that it's possible not to grieve, especially when family members who live so long with us pass away. How do we handle the sadness, and how do monks view feelings like these?
So grief is hard. It's something that is not easy to let go. So it does take time, and they say times will heal the hurt and the pain. But sometimes we have to reflect on basically impermanent, because we know as Buddhists and as practitioners, things come and they go, and that's impermanent. So it's a strange practice for Buddhist monk. Not so much here, but in Thailand, some monks will go into the cremation ground and just watch the body get cremated, where you see a whole body that's put on top of some firewood, wrapped around in cloth, or sometimes in the box. Then they light it up. Then you see, after a few hours, it basically turned to ashes. So for monks practice, yeah, that could be quite extreme. It's like those mountain climbers where you climb up. We are on the safety line. So when we are exposed to this, sometimes the fear and the emotion will come out really strongly in one's heart. But we understand this is the law of nature. Everything's impermanent. When we are born, sooner or later we will die. So this body is basically a vehicle. Yep. It's like the monastery old vehicles. We call it monastery bomb. Like we have like something like up to 9 vehicles in the monastery. And the monastery, like sometimes, when we get the new car, it's so new, and everyone like driving the car, and the monks like going out, especially the new electric cars. Then when our old monastery van is about 15 years old, and that's really falling apart, and using a lot of oil, quite a lot of oil, and it's using a lot of fuel, and things are not working. So yeah, to the body is the same thing. So as we get older, this body will fall apart, and pain, ache will rise, and sometimes you have to learn to let it go. The best way of letting it go is to basically go into deep samadhi, where you're free from the pain of this body. When you go in deep samadhi, then the body disappears. Then you feel a lot of freedom. Yep. And the Buddha said there's two pain. One is the body pain, and one is the mind pain, or two dart. So when you get hit by an arrow, you get hit by the body, so you feel it in the body, but also you feel it in the mind. So body, you feel the pain in the body, but mentally you get angrier and get upset. Yep. So when someone passes away, same thing, we feel the pain in our mind and the grief. And it's very hard to understand, especially we've been someone for so long, and they suddenly depart us. And when that happens, sometimes we have to reflect on all the good things that happen while they're around, and all the wonderful moments. Because we all lost loved ones. And when they do leave, it's a bit sad when that happens. But we always reflect that they live a good life. They have lived a happy life. And just think of all the good things they have done. And for Buddhist practitioner, and when we do something good, we always reflect on the good deeds that we did. Then we share the merits with them, no matter where they are. So when when I support come to the monastery, they offer dana and requisites to the monastery, to the monks. Then then when the monks do the meal blessing, we reflect on all the good things and we share in all the good deeds that we have done and we share with our departed loved ones. So the sharing of merits is a part of the Buddhist culture. So it's very important to share the merits. So even if we don't see our loved ones and they move on, we still wish them well and wish them happiness. Because that way, we feel good. It's quite interesting because even if someone has passed away, most of the time they will come back. So what I mean by that is I read a case in the on the internet where a family was driving, the mom was driving, and she had a car accident, and I think she crashed in the car in front, and another car crashed to her in the back, and one child got killed instantly, then the next child passed away maybe a couple of minutes later, and the remaining child was in hospital for a day, then later on she also passed away. So the family was so sad and heartbroken. So that's an extreme case of loss. But after 1 year she tried again to give birth, and she basically got pregnant, and she gave birth to triplets. Two girls and one boy. And the three child that passed away was two girls and one boy. So when our loved ones, especially our kids, if they do pass away, because their mind is so pure, you see they really want to come back to the same family, or close to close to another family member. So when we reflect on rebirth, so even if we miss our loved ones, in our future life, or their future life, they will come back, because that connection is very strong. So grief can be quite hard, but you see time will heal everything. So we always get a chance to see our loved ones in the future, either in this life or the next life. There's also one case here where a young Sri Lankan supporter, the child got a lung infection in the age of 12, then he passed away. Then after a year, the family gave birth to another child again. And just in case, the family took the child to the hospital and found that he's got another lung infection happening again. But they managed to catch it earlier, so they're able to treat the problem. So there's many cases of people getting reborn back to the same family. So sometimes, we do miss our loved ones. Sometimes they will visit us again in the future. Is there any other questions, Chris?
Yes, there certainly is, Venerable. I would like to read you another one.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Letting go is easier said than done. Mm-hmm. My son is non-binary LGBTQ. My husband and I can't accept this, so he has cut us off from his life. He is 23 years old and lives in another country. This is heartbreaking. Please advise.
I think with kids, it is hard. We try our best as a parents to support them. But with all parents, our responsibility is just to bring up the kids. But as they get older, they are independent. And when they become independent, they do live their own life. So sometimes we have to accept that. And I wish them well. Because if we want them to be different or be the person that we want them to do, then we will suffer a lot inside. Same with the monastery here. Sometimes we have young monks that are ordained, become novices. Then as they mature, then they become independent and do their own thing. Yep. So even myself, sometimes I feel like, wow, a bit let down. You put so much effort to take care of your junior monks. And once they become older and mature, then they become rebel and start to plot and go against you. Yep. And I realized what you expect. This is the human plane. And you can't expect junior monks to be respectful and humble. Because as they get older, they think they're a better monk. They can teach better. They know the teaching better. They can chant better. They can do things better. They can run a monastery better. They can build a monastery better. You're just another hopeless monk in the monastery. So when you have 40 monks, some of them move to other places, then you realize it can be very competitive, especially if you have so many monks from different backgrounds. So in a monastery, it's like the family too. Sometimes it's not what we expect. Or sometimes worse, they ordain, then they disrobe after a few years, and basically join another religion. So everything is so uncertain. People just go with the karma and the defilements. So even the monastery, everything is uncertain. So that even myself, when I want to become a monk and join the monastery, my parents were so upset. They felt like felt like losing a son. I think sometimes when I hang around my parents and go out shopping with them, like my parents will go shopping, I'll tag along just to keep my mom company. Sometimes I can sense my parents a bit embarrassed. Like I come to Australia and I've given up being a layperson, earning good money up in the mines, and just throwing everything away and become a Buddhist monk in my early 30s. So like my parents and my family members in Malaysia, they go, this venerable Chunda has already gone mad. But anyway, I found peace from my practice. That I think that inner peace and happiness and freedom, you can't find outside the world. The more I work in the world, the more I thrive. It's like the more mad I become. The more I stay in the forest, the more I'm by myself, the more happy and free I become. So Buddhist monk, we are mad in a different way. Okay. Okay. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does, in an interesting way. Thank you very, very much, Venerable. I don't have any more questions here at the moment. So, oh yes, Kimberly, lovely. Kimberly, would you like to unmute and go ahead?
Yes, I struggle with being mindful during the work day. I'm always thinking two steps ahead. Mm-hmm. Eat my lunch, don't even remember what I had, So I'm just kind of like, this is great because I find that meditation helps tremendously, but thank you.
Yeah, it is hard, especially in the workplace, to be mindful, because we are conditioned. Since being a child, our parents, our school system, our workplace, our college, those conditioning is very strong. So it's like learning to write. Like we are conditioned to write with our right hand, for us as right-handed or left-handed. So if we condition write with right hand all the time. The writing hand, this is only a simile. So the right hand is like the thinking and the planning and the doing mind. So we condition writing all the time. On the right hand, it's very hard to start writing our left hand. So our left hand is our a mindfulness mind, just mindful, aware and silent, and letting go. So to switch from writing a right hand to a left hand, that's the letting go, the silent and the mindfulness is hard. It's not easy. Yeah, but with the writing hand, it's okay. We can still be mindful. So we're mindful that we are working hard, we are thinking a lot, and we're doing things. Because that mindfulness, sometimes we just stop and remind ourselves, okay, I'm mindful. I know I'm thinking. I know I got scared of mind. I know I'm stressed out. I know I'm frustrated. I know I'm tired. I know I'm burnt out. So that mindfulness is just mindfulness of Dharma, our body, our thoughts, and our feeling. Then we know, okay, it's time to have a break. Then when we know we're not tired, we're rested, and our mind is clear, and we're free. So that mindfulness is very important. So as long as we are mindful, then we are practicing. As long as, even if we are very busy, the mindfulness is there. So when we are mindful, we know what's happening. We're not getting dragged away from with the defilements of other people in the world. Yep. So the mindfulness, we can practice anytime. Thank you. Hope that makes sense.
Kimberly looks very happy with that answer. Thank you. Thank you, Bhante. We have two new messages in the chat. So if there's nobody else who would like to unmute.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you can.
Yes. I want to ask how to deal with the feeling of emptiness after you let go of something that you get attached for a very long time, because I don't know, I almost feel like it's not really like boring, but it's this like, I think there's like a big hole. I think I let go of something. I think I letting go of something very, I will not say important, but something very big in my life. But I don't think that it's a bad thing. It's just like, because that thing built up my identity for a very large part. And I just have this kind of like feeling of emptiness, kind of, and how to deal with that. Do you have any advice? Thank you.
Emptiness, okay. Yeah, I don't know, it could be a hard one because it's also attachment. Sometimes you have to look at as an opportunity. So if we let go of one thing, then we are free to do something else. So I mean, for me, it's more of a freedom. What I mean by that is I tend to move from monastery to monastery. So I like doing that. It's also refreshing my practice. So sometimes I go to Newbury Monastery, and sometimes I go down to Kusla Hermitage. Then I come back to Bodhiyana Monastery. So if I spend too much time in one place, I get too involved with the community. So you got the community of monks and nuns at Newbury. Then you got the monastery getting built. Then you got the retreat center. Then you got the teaching. Then you got the wonderful supporters and the committee members. So when I'm there, there's only very few of us. When I first went there, there was two monks. Then my friend left. Now I was the only monk there. There's one nun there. But now the community built up again. So there's about maybe five monks, four nuns, quite reasonable sized monastery, and a big retreat center coming up next year. It'll be completed this year. So sometimes if I stay there too long, I feel like, wow, I'm really doing a lot, getting things done, doing the teaching, helping get a community built. And I remember when I was there, the first 2 years, when I left that monastery in Newbury and came back to Bodhiyana, I felt empty. I felt like something that's missing, yeah? And my purpose is gone. Because like when I was there, I felt like I built out something, yeah? Really big and special. When I left that place, I have a break, yeah? Because I was getting overworked and burned out, and a bit stressed out too. Stressed out from the drama. Yeah, but when I came back and went to my kutia in the forest, all I had was four walls, the kangaroos, the birds, and the tree. There's no big retreat center getting built, or big committee, or like 100 people coming for dana. And yeah, so it's going, wow. I mean, I do miss it, but there was a lot of burden. I mean, gain the honor and the respect is nicer. I think sometimes you feel good, yeah. But when you come back, you feel empty. But when you go to a meditation, then you realize, oh, this mind object, the mind, the feeling, the more you watch it, you realize, it is attachment. Yeah. So it's great for me moving from monastery to monastery, yeah? So I don't get too attached to my role here. Yeah. Because one time, the workshop was built. So I got a brand new workshop. I got yes. I was planning for a workshop for a while. I got it. So I can service and repair all the cars. Instead of working next to the workshop, woodwork place, where they're doing the woodwork while I was fixing the cars. And after a while, it's up to 8 vehicles. Then we got the new electric cars. And I got a bit attached to it. And then I realized, oh, geez, all this stuff is a bit worldly. Yeah. And if I attach to it too much, it tends to I obsess over it. There's no freedom. It's like being entangled in the net. So, yeah. So going to monastery to monastery, yeah. You get entangled a lot. So that's why in it's something we call tudong, where a monk will just grab their robe, their bag, the yam, and the umbrella, and just go from monastery to monastery. So that way they don't build out a nest in the monastery. First of all, monks, if we stay in the place too long, we can actually start to almost build out a nest. Like, with teaching, with work, with the community. We're trying to mentor the junior monks, with lay people, with teaching. I mean, all this can basically build out an ego and a self in me. Yeah. So if I leave this monastery and go to a new monastery where no one knows me, someone walk past, they see me, they go, oh, just another Asian monk. On the way to see. Maybe it's from Asia. maybe it's a tourist monk just traveling from place to place. So it's great when I go there. No one knows me. It's great. If I stay in a place too long, then people know me. Then they start to give me respect and ask if I need anything. Then after a while, if I become too important or well-known, it can be a hindrance to my practice. So if I can disappear and go to somewhere else, it's great. So I just like a nobody. So see it as an opportunity. If you lose something, there's always something good coming down the road in the future. So see it as an opportunity to do something new or a fresh start. Yep. So when I find, if I lose something, great, I'm free. Then I'm free to do something else. Yeah, so I see it as not burdening myself too much. Yeah, so sometimes it's good when you do something well, but when you lose it, see it as unburdening yourself. Yeah, I hope that makes sense. Okay, I think there's one more person.
Okay, yes. Is there somebody else who'd like to unmute and ask a question then?
Hi, this is Martha. I just have a question about technique. It's been so helpful for me to have you folks in the morning. It's just so doggone helpful. For us, I know it's, what is 6 p.m., excuse me, 7 p.m.? No, I think y'all are for 12 hours ahead of us. Is it 8 p.m. that y'all start over there?
We start at 7, yeah, 7 o'clock.
At
now,
7
yes.
p.m. It's 7 in the a.m. here, and it's extremely helpful for me. And I'm working on body awareness simply because I checked out of what my body is feeling so many years ago, and then it just got worse. Anyway, my when it comes to mindfulness, which I just discovered, somebody said last night, because I'm doing additional groups other than you, just so that I can have something in the morning from someone who knows more than I do, because I really enjoy this lifelong process of learning about myself through folks who are really giving up everything except self and service. And I mean that so much. I can't tell you how appreciative I am. So anyway, waking up and remembering, is this really how I want to feel in the morning? Is this really how I want to feel right now? So at any rate, remembering. So when it comes to technique and seeing how am I feeling? I've been obsessing about, do I focus on the breath here or the belly breathing? Because I really like to do whatever technique or with whichever teacher I am with. And it's interesting, when I do belly breathing, I hate belly breathing. But is that a good thing to focus on then? Because I'm obsessed about letting go of that region of my body. But I can. And it brings up a lot of feelings to work with. Or should I focus on the breath here? Because I really can feel the gap between in and out breath, and there is a pure awareness and a calm that is right there. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts are for me practicing body awareness with the anchor or the object, mind object of focusing, so that I can see what's going on in my body. Should I focus on the belly breathing or the nose, the gap between the in and out, knowing that I can feel pure awareness here? It's not as clear in the belly breathing, but it brings up thoughts. Okay. What are your thoughts?
Okay.
Thank you.
With the mindfulness or on the breath, or the rising of the breath in the tummy, or sometimes in the chest, all these are basic techniques, because our mind can be all over the place. So we need an anchor point. So the anchor is to bring that mindfulness back to the body, to the mind, and to the feeling. So when we bring our awareness to this body and mind and feeling, we need something to anchor it. So if your mind becomes peacefuler and tranquiler just by watching the breath from front of your face, from your chest, or from your tummy, then it will work. Because regardless which technique which object you decide to watch, the main thing is, if you allow your mind to calm down, and allow the mindfulness to increase, to build up. So regardless if you're watching from your tummy or your front of your face with the breath, if it leads to peace and letting go, then it's working. Yep. So you have to see, it's just a technique. So which other technique works, then apply that.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. Bhante, we have another question here in the chat. Can I read it to you?
Yes, please.
Thank you so much for this talk. I've learned something recently related to someone very close to me, which is very painful to me. It is related to anxiety, and I'm very disturbed. I'm trying to stay strong and live in the present moment. I seek your advice on how to direct to my loved one for support, meditation, etc.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really know the background, so I'm just going to guess. So it is hard. So no matter where your friends is, what's happening with your friend, and it is, say it's affecting how you feel. Sometimes it's hard because you can support them, but if you're getting affected by how they are, then sometimes it's good to distance yourself once in a while, or sometimes apply some boundary. Yep. So it depends. If it's someone that's very close by and he or she needs a support, and you cannot put any boundary, then you just have to learn to be a carer and just care for that person without getting emotionally caught up with it. So what I mean by that is we have one supporter. His dad's got Alzheimer's, so sometimes his dad will do like really crazy stuff, like shout at someone, or start to hit other people, random people. Yep. So his son will find it quite difficult and distracting sometimes to restrain his dad. Yep. So he find that it is hard, and it can affect him emotionally. Where when he came to the monastery, he realized that he's got back pain in the back, stiffness on his on the upper body. But after 2 weeks, the stiffness and the tightness on the upper body and the back, it just went away. And he realized it was sometimes the stress and anxiety, trying to care for his dad, that was causing him a bit of distress. So it is difficult, but time to time, you need to have a break and basically let go. Yeah, because to be a carer is very difficult. It's quite an important job, but it's not an easy job. And you need to make time for yourself to mentally rest and recover. So I hope that makes sense. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Bhante. Just one last one, if you don't mind, Bhante. Dad has unconditional love for us all. He worries a lot, even though we are all mature adults. Mm-hmm. He reflects and regrets.
Oh, okay.
How do we best advise Dad to let go?
That's a bit hard sometimes. Sometimes, I mean, even I have my parents and my brothers and sisters, and they're not practice Buddhists. And sometimes when they have a hard time, all I can do is just be around with them and just comfort them, and just give them advice on life, on letting go, and on accepting things. I mean, sometimes I see my younger brother just got married 2 years ago, and he's working very hard. And the wife is bossing him around a bit. Yeah. Before that, it was pretty free. Yeah. And I realized there's nothing I can do. My job is just be kind to both of them. Yep. And I mean, it's hard being a family member not to get too involved, because with my family affair, it is their lay business, and it's their karma, how things come across. There's nothing much I can do. Just learn to be kind, gentle, and forgiving, and not to take side. That's the main thing, not to take side, because I can't take side with my parents or with my brother or with my sister-in-law. I have to really have to be neutral, and just be kind, and just listen, to their point of view, their difficulties, and their complaints. Yep. So sometimes even myself, I'm pretty free of it, but when I go back home, I realize, my family do have a bit of issues. Some days it can be quite dysfunctional family, Yeah, in a way it's funny, yeah? But also not funny. Yeah? But yeah, all I can do is be kind and support them and stay neutral. Yeah. Okay. Hope that makes sense.
Yes, be kind and be neutral and support.
Yeah, support.
Sounds very appropriate, Venerable. Venerable, would you like to finish off now with just either a short chant in Pali or a short blessing in Pali?
Okay, so let's do a quick blessing. Okay. Nati ne salangano, butu ne salangano, ete na sachawate na sutite hota sapata. Nati ne salangano, damu ne salangano, ete na sachawate na sutite hota sapata. Nati ne salangano, sangu me salangano, ete na sachawate na sutite hota sapata. So that what that means is, may the Buddha teaching, the Dharma, and the Sangha protect you in your practice. Yep, no matter where you are. So basically, may the Triple Gem guide you and protect you in your practice. But most important thing, may your own practice of Sila, compassion, mindfulness, and forgiveness protect your mind. So in order for you to be free, with a mind that's free from defilements, so wisdom will rise naturally in our heart and our mind. Yep. So yep, your own practice, your sila, your meditation, your wisdom, that's your true protection. Okay, thank you.